Recording. Thank you, Bill.
Okay, we're recording.
All right, thank you. So it is 6:01, and I am Mayor Julia Johnson. Today is March 3rd, 2021, and I am calling to order this joint council session between the Planning Commission and the City Council. There we are. I'm going to begin with roll call, and I will start with the city council members. There you are, Joe. Hello. Welcome, Joe. After I'm through doing roll call, I thought perhaps you'd like to do roll call for the Planning Commission. Okay. Sounds good. Okay. So I'm going to begin with Glenn Allen.
Present.
Kevin Loy.
Here.
Brenda Kinzer.
Present.
Joellen Kesty.
Here.
Brendan McGoffin.
Present.
Chuck Owen.
Present.
And Carl DeYoung. Okay, I don't see him online either. All right. My fair chairman, Joe Fattizzi, would you like to do the roll call for the Planning Commission?
I would, thank you. Planning Commission, Eric Johnson.
Present.
Danielle Freiberger.
Present.
Joe Frenette. Is Joe here? Is Silas here? That's two not present. Who else are we missing here?
Stacy Huggins.
Is Pat here? Julia, should we wait another 5 minutes?
Let's just move forward. I feel bad that they're not here, but I just have a few words that I wanted to share, and hopefully by the time I'm through, mine will take all of 1 or 2 minutes.
We'll I'll continue on. Stacy Penno, not present. And Silas isn't present. Joe's not present. And Pat Huggins. So we only have two members here. I need to talk to people.
Well, actually, there's three of you. So, and for the record, I want to note that I see Councilman Carl DeYoung just came on. So welcome, Carl. Okay. First off, I just want to start off by saying, you know, for a commission that only meets once a month, so really 12 times out of the year, and I know this past year, 2020, there were two meetings that were canceled due to COVID. You actually got a lot accomplished. You really did. And I want to thank you for that. The most recent one, of course, was the parking requirements for the CBD, which the council passed at last council meeting on February 24th. And the other is working on the rezoning, especially for the Reed Street property where you had did the rezoning from residential 7 to the public, our new park. And then also looking at the rezone requests for the golf course from mixed commercial to residence. And there was one other where I think it was also going, I think it was R5 to residential. So also I want to acknowledge the work that you did on the ADUs. That was a lot of work. That took a lot of time and you put great thought into it. It's going to be very beneficial to our city. So I send a huge thanks on behalf of both the city council and also the citizens of Cedro Woolley. So other than that, I think the idea is to talk about a few things that are coming up, and then later we'll open it up to both, well, mainly, I guess, to the council to see what it is they'd like to put before the Planning Commission this year in 2021. So with that, I did not see where anybody else came on. So I'm gonna turn it over to our Director of Building and Planning, John Coleman.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council. Good evening to the Planning Commission members. So tonight is our annual discussion of what the Planning Commission is going to work on for the annual comp plan update cycle. So once a year, we get the opportunity to update our comprehensive plan, and all of those changes need to be done together throughout the year. And then passed at one time. So sometimes there's very disparate items on the docket. The past couple of years has been kind of light because we finished a major update to the comprehensive plan in 2016. So it's mostly been zoning changes that we've been working on for the past couple of years. And then the ADU thing a couple of years ago. Again, this year, because our comp plan is fairly fresh still, and it doesn't need to be updated again until 2025, staff doesn't have anything that we're really itching to change in the comp plan. We haven't come across anything over the past few years that has been problematic that we've seen that would require changes. We're definitely seeing changes that are going to need to happen. Although I'm not sure that right now is the right time. So I'll get into that in just a moment. Right now, the only things that we have on the 2021 docket is two rezone requests. One is the holdover from last year. It was a request from Bob Ruby to rezone 3 acres of land from mixed commercial to residential 5. That's the property at the golf course. The Planning Commission reviewed that, made a recommendation to the council, and then the council reviewed the Planning Commission's recommendation in 2020 and determined that it needs further study, and so sent it back to the Planning Commission for the 2021 cycle. So that'll definitely be on the 2021 docket. And the applicant has confirmed that, yes, they are interested in continuing with that application request. So we will be working on that. In addition to that rezone, we've received a request from the Bucco family to change. They have two parcels off of Cook Road behind the first row of parcels there that are zoned mixed commercial. They've requested to change those 5 acres or 5.2 acres of land to residential 15, which is the apartment designation. So you can get 15 units per acre in that zone, and we allow apartments. So they did make that request. They paid their fees. So we generally run all the rezone requests through the process if somebody makes a private land request. So we anticipate, we recommend that that one be on the docket as well, and let the Planning Commission do their work on it and bring you a recommendation later this year. So that's the only things that we see that actually need to be on the 2021 docket. Public Works Department updated the transportation plan last year. So unless there's any transportation plan updates that needed to be done, that one should be pretty good. And I can see Mark, it doesn't look like he's jumping up and down thinking that there needs to be anything to the transportation plan done. But we're not here to make any decisions tonight. Tonight's a first read. So what I wanted to have the Planning Commission and City Council, if there was anything that any of you members were itching to see changed in any of the elements of the comp plan, the Planning Commission could work on it, but we don't see any necessary changes at now, and we can discuss that today. That's what I was part of what we anticipated today would include. We do have some things that we'd like to address in the comp plan in the long run, but it now doesn't seem like the right time. So like I said, we have to do a periodic update for the Growth Management Act that's going to be required to be completed in June of 2025. And sometime in 2022 or 2023, the Office of Financial Management, I'll refer to them as the OFM, is going to produce regional population projections. Those regional population projections will then be reviewed through the Skagit Council of Governments Board, and the regional planning departments get together and make recommendations as to what our likely population projections are going to be. And so what that that whole process is a way of the regional governments to come together and cooperatively work to see, to estimate what the likely population growth from 2025 through to 2045 will be based on those OFM numbers. And then we run it through our local policy and politics system to make a determination of what our target's going to be. The county actually makes that that decision based on recommendations from the jurisdictions and the SCOG Council, the Skagit Council of Governments, which is SCOG, Growth Management Steering Committee. And that's the mayors from each of the towns and the three commissioners from the county. So we'll be doing a big population projection update in 2022 or 2023, whenever we get those numbers. And from that population projection, that's when we really do the hard work of determining what our urban growth area size needs to be. So we look at the projections and see, you know, based on the amount of built out land and vacant land that we have, we make a determination of, do we need to expand our urban growth area to meet those projected populations? Or there's options of, do we change our policies and our development regulations to allow more residential development at, say, denser levels would be one way of doing it. So, you know, if you look at, you know, we're going to be growing by X amount of people, in order to accommodate that, we can either expand our urban growth area to have a more available land for development, or B, we can change our density requirements and, you know, say maybe allow more residential units in certain residential zones or in some of the commercial zones. That's the infill model that you could follow. Or you could do, of course, option C would be a split of, you know, some expanding the urban growth area, some higher densities throughout the city. So those are going to be really tough policy questions that we'll be addressing in a couple of years. So we're not quite ready to make any changes on population stuff, because we're going to be gearing up to do that the next 2 year or two. So at that, you know, one of the things that we hear all of the time and is a very real problem in Skagit County is related to housing. So we would, as part of that population update cycle, we would like to revamp our housing element and take a real hard look at our housing policies, our housing goals, and really look at it a lot closer than we have in the past. In the meantime, you know, there's been a lot of pressure from people calling and saying, hey, you should allow more duplexes in single family neighborhoods. You should allow more apartments here and there. But, you know, it's mostly just people calling and saying, hey, you know, I found a cheap piece of land here and can I put a fourplex there? And I say, well, no, that's in a single family residential neighborhood. All you can do is one lot, something like that, something to that effect. So we'll study where the council wants to go with that over the next couple of years. So keep that in mind as we progress towards updating our housing element. How would the council like to see the city address housing? Is it by allowing more infill? Is it by keeping things status quo and encouraging more development on the fringe of the city and expand our urban growth area? There's, you know, a certain amount of options that the city has to address these issues. Now, complicating that a little further is the legislature has been studying ways of making encouraging infill over the past years. So last year there was a bill that would have paid cities a little bit of money to do the planning to allow more infill, such as, you know, more duplexes in the single family residential zones, or other middle housing types, such as, you know, fourplexes and triplexes in areas that are typically single family. We didn't elect to take any of that money and do any of those projects. One, because we didn't have the staff time and ability to manage such a complex change. And two, it wasn't really, the timing isn't right. But this year, the legislature is looking at more bills like that. And some of them are not going to be incentives as much as requirements. So we've been keeping our eye on the bills in legislature, and it's unclear if any of those or any bills are going to require cities to allow more middle housing, such as duplexes and fourplexes. But we'll see how it shakes out. So that's another reason why we're not ready to jump on our housing element right now. It's really going to be better timed with our comprehensive update that is coming up in 2025. So those are some of the big issues that we're looking at. And that's why we don't have any plans for changing anything in the comp plan this year. But if there's anything that any topics that the council wanted to discuss with the Planning Commission and see if there was anything that might need to possible changes that you might want to see, we can look into that. And today's the work session. We're not asking for any actual motions today, but at the next council meeting, which is next week, well, that might be too soon because I think council packs are already due for that. So maybe it'd be in the first one in March, bring the 2021 docket to the council for you to take action. So that'll give us some time to, you know, think about if we have anything that we discuss about tonight. So with that, I want to leave it to the council to, if they have any questions or anything that they want to talk about.
So just to clarify, John, are you opening it up for everything? So if somebody wanted to talk even about the signage in the CBD or even the limiting what businesses can or cannot do as far as to their businesses?
This is the council's work session. I encourage you to talk about what's important to you. And maybe through our conversations, we'll suss out and determine if there's anything in the comp plan that would need to be changed to address some of your visions. That one topic that you're talking about, the CBD, I think that's a good idea to discuss today. I was hoping to get into that.
Are you thinking about the design and the historic preservation, or are you talking about the signs or both?
You know, really anything. The Planning Commission is working on the signage issue right now. The council clearly had some concern about the historical buildings and design review in the Central Business District. So I think that'll be really good to talk about tonight and get the council's perspective on that to help the Planning Commission, because we're anticipating, not as part of the docket plan, but just other work that the Planning Commission is going to be working on in 2021. We anticipate working on that design review standards for the CBD. So why don't we just go with what the council wants to talk about, start with that, and I'll make some notes and go from there.
All right. So I'm opening it up to the council. Is there anyone who would like to discuss the designs?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, Councilman Allen, go ahead.
You just stole all my thunder. I had it written down right here. This is to John. Who makes the decisions on the design and review? Is it is it planning and then goes to council for approval? Or, you know, I'm just going back, you know, this is kind of like institutional memory, if you will. It's like an elephant, but I don't know whether, you know, I think this council has more important things than to go over case by case, but so does planning probably. So I don't know who is responsible for making the decisions or initial decisions for council approval. And okay. And you got my blood pressure up when you started talking about the legislative bills. They're just cramming it down our throats. So anyway, I feel sorry for you to have to deal with that. Anyway, thank you for your time.
Okay, so first, legislature, you know, they'll beat those things to death, and sometimes they make it down to us and sometimes they don't. So we keep our eye on it, but we don't live and die by everything they do, because it could change dramatically in a couple hours. But so thank you. The design review currently is required for all modifications to business, to buildings in the central business district. So a building owner, if they wanted to make any changes, including painting, including putting garage doors on the front where there were currently windows, is required to get a design review application submitted to the planning department. And that is an administrative review process. So it is strictly done by the planning department. We use the design criteria in the Cedar Woolley Design Standards and Guidelines Manual. That is the manual that, you know, we've been discussing quite a bit lately, and does it have enough teeth? So we're already planning on bringing that to the Planning Commission for them to review and make sure that it has enough shall statements to guide staff on our review of changes and tighten up the process. Your institutional memory about the process, and I think I got into this a little bit at the last council meeting, is accurate. In the past, any of these design changes would have to have gone to the Planning Commission for them to approve. The council changed that, and I think it was 2010, because it was taking, you know, sometimes a month and a half to get a Planning Commission approval on something simple like a sign or painting. So that was causing some frustration for the downtown business owners and the council too. So they made that an administrative process. So that's where we're at now. We still recommend that, you know, we make this keep it an administrative process. We just want to, what we're recommending is that we tighten up the design standards to make sure that nothing slips through the cracks. And of course, unrelated but related to that is we need to make a better effort with the downtown business owners to let them know that there is requirements for them to go through a design review before making changes.
But that would also have to, you'd have to reach out to the owners as well, because as you are aware, several of the buildings are owned by people who do not live within Cedar Woolley. So if anybody who's renting, leasing a space, they would probably go to the owner of the building to make those requests. Is there any way that we could reach out to them, send a letter to them that will specify they need to clear that with the city before they give permission for any kind of changes to happen within the building?
I guess a letter writing campaign to the downtown business owners, it would be a starting point. So I think probably a prudent path would be to write a letter, a form letter stating, you know, something to the effect of, hey, local business owner, local building owner, we love that you're interested in investing in Cedar Woolley, and we want you to keep in mind that, you know, any modifications need design review approval in order to keep the downtown It's historic and beautiful feel. It's in the best interest of the entire downtown if we do this, something, yada, 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 like that. Signed sincerely, whomever the council wants to sign something like that, whether it's the mayor or the planning department or whomever. And then it's not a big deal for us to do an address search of all the property owners downtown and put together a mailing list.
Any other comments from the council?
Yeah, I have a question.
Very good. Thank you. Councilwoman Kinzer.
Yeah, John, I'd like to tap into your brain about this because I'm sure your knowledge is much greater than mine about these things. If specific buildings receive historic designations, that really puts a limit on the type of modification that can be made on that building. Is that correct or is that not correct?
Well, if you mean like put on the National Historic Register, then absolutely. Then that then there's a very strict criteria of changes. And that's put out by, I think it's the National Park District, actually. So
yeah,
that's a very high bar.
Well, I think, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, but the other side of the coin is that it also opens up the possibility of grants. So there also can be monies for those business owners or even building owners to make those changes.
Yeah, and I don't think you would have to be on the National Historic Register. There are other types of historic registries that a building could become a part of to get specific grants for restoration or modification that stay within specific standards.
I'll have to look into what other types of historic designation besides the National Historic Register are available and how that could fit into a program of, you know, protecting our more the heritage buildings downtown.
Yeah, and I also know that if we did get the Main Street designation, which was previously attempted, but unfortunately did not get completed, if we could still push towards that, and it can't be the city that does that, it has to be a nonprofit group, but that would definitely benefit the city as well if we could find another group that would be willing to give that a try. Joellen.
I know, I was just waiting. I with the Zoom, I don't want to interrupt anybody.
I don't know, just thought, you know.
Yeah. I everything that John had already mentioned, I was super excited about because going over the regulations for downtown businesses and keep preserving our historical buildings and then my only other thing is to look at the signage, but that was for the, and now I can't think of it. Oh.
The plaques that we put on the building that talks about the dates that they were.
No, but that's awesome too. No, I was talking about the, for grocery stores and the buildings, my light signs.
The reader boards.
Oh, thank you. Reader boards. Think of it. Gotcha. Yes. And so they're already handling that and doing awesome and talking about it. And again, making the rules and regulations so that they'll have something to stand by. And so you guys are doing awesome. I'm super excited. Those are my two things I care about.
So any other topics anybody wants to bring up? Continuing talking about the buildings? Yes.
I was just going to make a comment. All the things that are going on now, that how they changed Jameson Street and John, they're changing John Liner number. I was on the planning commission 17, 18 years ago when all this stuff started coming around. So whatever you do today may not come in for decades, but it's something that takes time and time and time. But it's interesting to see how almost 20 years later, how it's finally coming around.
That's a cool perspective. Thank you, Councilman Loy. Councilman McGoffin, you had something you wanted to add here?
Oh, thank you, Madam Mayor. I was hoping to ask the Planning Commission just on their input towards the Mayor Steve Sexton's Peace Road Shelter project. It's kind of the first one that's come up with this trying to work with the homelessness problem and getting the funds that we'll be receiving and the best allocation for those. I was hoping to just hear your guys' input on, you know, what's our game plan and what do you think is the best way to spend that money?
I don't think we've heard about that. The last couple of agendas I looked at, so maybe you can elaborate more on it.
Actually, this will be in Burlington, so it doesn't have anything to do with Cedar Woolley. What I brought up before the city council at our last meeting had to do with the possibility of Cedar Woolley putting a contribution towards the startup of that. So, in fact, I sent something out to everybody today. It should be in your email regarding that.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, my question was a little bit more on how does Cedar Woolley want to deal with this problem with any money that would be coming in? I know Burlington, you know, got a jump on this and this is their first project. I'd be looking at more specifically, how would Cedar Woolley like to deal with this problem? And are there any projects that the Planning Commission and the council could work together on?
Well, I think part of it has to do with the need. I know that Cedar Woolley is going to have access to that. Any officers that have, we have very, very little homelessness here in Cedar Woolley. We're fortunate compared to the other cities. So it's not something that we've really had to address yet. I think, if I may add my two cents, I would really like to see how it plays out in Burlington. And because, quite frankly, what I'm hoping to bring later before the council is something that's more has to do with bringing people into more permanent housing and transitional housing. I would like to see Cedar Woolley step up and do that. So that's another topic for another time. I don't know if that would really tie into the Planning Commission, but I do have a vision for that. I've talked extensively with it to our city supervisor, Doug, and I've talked with other people about it. Councilwoman Kesty, she and I've had conversation regarding it. I've shared a few things. So it's something that I'd like to see happen. So yeah, I'd like something a little more that would be more permanent for people rather than a temporary shelter, especially since it looks like Burlington's going to do a beautiful job of it, what they've got covered. Have you had a chance to read that article that I sent out? Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Madam Mayor, I do have a comment on that.
Yes, Councilwoman Kinzer.
I know we've mentioned that Cedar Woolley really doesn't have a homelessness problem, but I think it's kind of behind closed doors. There are a huge number of people couch surfing and living in their cars that mm-hmm. we might not necessarily see, but many of them are, you know, youth or very young people going through these situations where they don't have a home, but they'll crash at a friend's house here and there and here and there, or just stay in their car. And that is mm-hmm. That is part of our homeless population that we really need to pay attention to.
Yeah, absolutely. I get
they're
that.
They're not quite so visible to us because they're not camped on a bench in downtown or a tent, you know, down on 4th Street or Jameson Street somewhere. I think it gets brushed under the rug by a lot of people that is happening as well. And we need to raise awareness to that being an issue also.
Yeah. So that's a topic that we have had discussion on at least for the last 3 years. For as long as I have been in this position, I have been attending different committees where we've been working on that. I think Councilman Loy hit the nail on the head when he said process is slow. It is truly slow getting things going. So what Mayor Sexton and his council is doing over in Burlington right now, that isn't something that, you know, was, you know, poof, there it is. It's something that's been talked about and worked on for a number of years, and he was able, timing and everything just fell into place for them to be able to do that. So yeah, you're absolutely right. It is very apparent that we need to do something. Yeah. Moving on, for the sake of this meeting though, and trying to, or thinking of those issues or policies that you would like to see happen here in Cedar Woolley that would include the Planning Commission, does anybody have any thoughts regarding that or ideas? Okay. I actually have one, because I receive calls, as we do. Actually, there's several of us here at City Hall who receive calls regarding the sidewalks. The sidewalks are a real issue. And part of that has to do with, actually sometimes a great deal of it has to do with, the trees that are growing next to the sidewalks and pushing them up. And so I am wondering if the Planning Commission would be able to take on some sort of a, or take a look at the type of trees that maybe Cedar Woolley would allow to be planted, especially in the parking strips area. What are those called, John, between the road and the sidewalk? That is called?
We call it the parking strip.
Okay, yeah, the parking strip. Because I think that if we replace the sidewalks, or whoever replaces them, there would be longevity if we had trees that didn't have the roots that go underneath them. So specific trees, limiting, you know, what kind of trees you could actually put in. Is that something that you would be willing to take on? And is that something maybe the council would like to see addressed?
So, well, I can give a little background on that issue. Mark's probably getting a little fidgety right now, because the trees that are allowed in that planting strip is governed by Chapter 12 of the Cedar Woolley Municipal Code that actually does have a list of what trees are allowed and not allowed. I'm trying to scroll to that right now. Mark, do you want to address that while I find the specific code section?
Certainly. Yes, I've looked at this over the last few years. We have obviously some relatively newer parts of town, like North Murdoch Street, where improper trees were planted, the tulip trees in there, and they've played havoc with those sidewalks up there. I've checked at that and looking at that and walking around town, and the trees that are currently in the list that John is referring to in Chapter 12 are actually designated street trees. They're generally dwarf species. I guess the one thing that could certainly be looked at again is just to see if there's any of those that have some issues with them as well. But they are actually designed for that type of application, for those planter strips between the back of the curb and the sidewalk. Personally, our 5-foot standard planter strip is pretty narrow for any tree in my mind. Just looking, they all grow. Even the dwarves eventually will outgrow that space and they'll have to be replaced. And you may have noticed we planted quite a few trees with our 2012 widening and sidewalk project along Highway 20, most of which have died, which is very disappointing. And a lot of that's just because that's not a very ideal space for trees to grow in a 5-foot planter strip. They don't necessarily get enough moisture from that to support the roots. Anyway, that's a little background from my perspective. I do believe that the trees that are currently in Chapter 12 are mostly proper for that kind of application, but there are still problems that come up even with the proper trees in those planter strips. Far better in my mind, to be honest with you, is to planter strips are a necessary safety feature. It gets the traffic, especially on the narrower sidewalks, often traveled way a little farther, which is always a good idea. But far better in my mind is to have the trees that are required by the city be planted on the property owner's property that's themselves, and again, require anything that's within a certain zone of the back of the sidewalk to be the species that are suitable for that.
And I do understand. I know that it's hard to monitor that. We just don't do that. And I and a lot of people, I'm sure, are not aware that, just like I wasn't, are not aware that there are certain trees that need to be planted in the parking strip.
Some of the more noticeable trees, you know, along Talcott, for example, are those large big leaf maples that are planted in the planting strip there. And those are, you know, entirely inappropriate tree planting for something like that. However, you know, they've been there for dozens of years, decades and decades, and you know, they're iconic at this point. So it becomes a tough issue. You don't want to take them down, but they are causing problems, clearly. So I don't know if that's something that is the planning chapter 12's a little bit outside of what the planning commission normally works on. That's the public works chapter. So
Mr. Patisi, do you have a comment?
Last year we did I believe we started an inventory of dangerous trees, which would include trees of that type. So John, when we did that, I know we had some funding from the state to do the parks, right? And then when we went about doing the city survey, did we include that as part of the a survey category that it's interrupting, you know, whatever pavement or sidewalks or around a tree of that type? When did we start that, last September?
I don't recall the planning department or the planning commission working on a tree inventory.
It came up in a meeting, and I think Catherine was working with the state or Department of Ecology or Natural Resources, was it?
So yes, the Department of Natural Resources approached us. They had a new person that was working on, I guess a tree inventory was part of that. Right. And then COVID hit, and I'm not sure that he still works there anymore.
So that
Catherine should be on the line. She might be able to remind us what that was called.
So that was a program for urban forestry with the intention of kind of farther down the line becoming a tree city. And John's right. I haven't heard from that DNR contact for some time, and COVID did significantly interrupt that process just with staff time and resources. So that's been kind of placed on the back burner.
Now, when something like that goes to the side, is it just deferred to future periods? Because they need to be funded, right? I mean, somebody's not going to spend months going through different sections of the city to identify different things for a whole variety of reasons. So even though they made that offer prior COVID, which would have been a year ago this month, right? Is it still on the table that so, to a future date we can get that reenacted?
In our land use element, I believe it is.
Okay.
We have a policy goal to work on a project like that in urban forestry. There's that's a cooperative process between our department and the public works department, because as part of an urban forestry program, at least the one that the DNR was offering has a maintenance and tree ordinance. So it would actually require the city public works department to be involved and do work. So that's something that we need to run through the city council and public works department also to make sure that that is going in the direction that the city leadership envisions.
I looked at it as free resources of something that we needed.
I'm not sure how much help they were offering, as much as coming and saying, hey, why don't you guys do this?
Oh, okay.
We can give you instructions on that.
Another requirement.
They offered to do a tree inventory for us for all the trees in the right-of-way. I don't know that it was focused at all on any hazardous type trees or just kind of like a inventory of the state of our public trees. and where they're at health-wise and whatnot. And there were some kind of follow-up conditions. If we accepted the free tree inventory, we would have to kind of do a follow-up of some kind and move forward with the tree urban forestry program. So it wasn't, it was free, but it was, you know, there were some expectations.
Some conditions, but that's okay. Yeah. It's yeah. moving in the right direction.
I do know the planning commission. I think both Commissioner Johnson and Commissioner Huggins have talked about the possibility of kind of laying out some sort of a plan or a design for certain streets to have trees. Commissioner Johnson, can you speak to that?
Sure, thank you, Madam Mayor. It's just purely informal, something that Commissioner Huggins and I have talked about as a sidebar. When we have kind of thought about and envisioned the city, a lot of what shapes, design standards and aesthetics for what we find appealing for the city often is rooted in Ferry Street and Talcott Street. And, you know, we're not saying that Ferry Street and Talcott Street has to be every street, but, you know, while trees may have caused some issues for the city, you know, it's definitely part of that aesthetic that we really like. And we find that a lot of other people within the city also take as being a big draw for Cedar Woolley. You know, we aren't the big commercial entity that Burlington is, nor do I think we really want to be. Even though the city is, you know, pro small business, you know, we're not really pro box store either. So, you know, what do you do to enhance your city? You know, the residential, the bedroom element of it is the aesthetics of residences. So, you know, we found the Tree City idea appealing. We definitely wanted to potentially move forward with coming up with some sort of standards that definitely can be put into place that won't cause an issue. And so that was sort of the discussion that he and I had.
All right, thank you.
Madam Mayor?
Yes, Councilman Allen.
I want to thank Commissioner Johnson, not Mayor Johnson, on what he just said. I was going to say, you know, I'm starting to take this personally because I live in a house that was built in 1922 and our tree was probably planted there, and it's a humongous oak. But I think it does give character. That was one of the reasons we bought the house. And is that tree grandfathered under these proposals or anything? Or holy smolter, do I have to spend $5,000 to have it taken down? You know, I mean, that's, and like Eric was saying, Mr. Johnson, it adds flavor to the neighborhoods. And from what I have heard, Ferry Street and Talcott are some of the favorite streets for tourists to, you know, meander down. And I don't know, I hate to think my tree has to come down because it survived for 100 years. So anyway, I'll get off it, okay?
Nobody's saying your tree has to come down. We're not talking about that. I think we're just talking about when people decide to plant a tree is all. Councilman DeYoung.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, John, I'm looking at your recommended actions, and on the one requested amendment from the Buckle Family Trust. So it's changing from mixed commercial to residential 15, 5.21 acres. So that has the possibility of 78 units in that 5 acres. My math working out. I went to public school, so just wanted to make sure that I knew what kind of density we're looking at there.
Well, I haven't bothered to do the math yet. Let's do 5.21 times 15 is, yeah, 78 units. Your public school education was adequate.
Thank you. I blame Brocksmith. Next question I have for that then is, can you kind of describe how that might look? Is that going to be like a pancake 4+1 with a mixed commercial below and then 4 residential on top? How does that work?
So they haven't submitted plans. So we're not entirely sure. Right now, if they're in the mixed commercial, so they could do commercial below and get 8 units in that building. But that's kind of limited. They're thinking more apartment buildings. Right now, you're allowed in the R15 zone up to 12 units per building. So there wouldn't be any, you know, be a 78 divided by 12 units. Divided by 12, that would be like 7 buildings of 12 and under units would be possible on the 5 acres.
Okay, thank you for that.
There's a lot to discuss about the merits of that project.
So I was wondering, would they, that probably isn't coming in at all at one time, boom, like SimCity. It's more of a phasic idea, and that's what we've seen in the past.
Well, you know, we have, it's a little aside from this, getting into project review, but they have submitted on the several acres north of there around the creek an application for 65 lots of regular subdivision. And that notice went out earlier this week or last week sometime. And that would be different. So they're planning that in 3 phases. So should this 5 acres be rezoned to R15, which is, you know, it's not a done deal by any stretch of the imagination. I would imagine that they would probably phase out those buildings. You know, most of these things are based on how much money you can get to build.
Market conditions, right?
Market conditions, yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to kind of check the Legos, if you will, of what space could be taken up if it was to be maximized by this. And so thank you for that. And again, just a point of personal privilege, thanks again to the Planning Commission for all the hard volunteer work that you do for the city. Really appreciate it. And I'm glad we have such capable and motivated folks on the Planning Commission. Thank you.
Yes, Planning Commissioner Fatisi.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, John, this has always been my question too, and this was one of the issues that I had with the golf course. So we're looking at 5 acres that they want to rezone to an R15. This is to Councilmember DeYoung's comment as well. So in my mixed commercial, I can go 60 feet high, okay? 60 feet, if I double my setbacks, which really isn't a big deal when I have 5 acres. So if we look at the two sides of it, an R15 versus an MC taking advantage of that 60-foot height extension, you need an elevator. You'd have amazing views, by the way, making it highly marketable. I don't understand why people want to convert to just residential only when you have a captive population in a building that goes 6 stories. And I know it's only a proposal, but I guess my point is, why wouldn't we want the best of both worlds to be able to accomplish our density, our infill, that we're going to have a higher requirement, it sounds, moving forward. And I look at other jurisdictions that have done just that, that they've gone higher. You have your mixed commercial, so the city gets additional revenue. Tenants get definitely much better services. And you could even set them up where they're actually single family units, where they're condominiumized. See, we have a big population that wants to be in Cedro Woolley, especially retirement people, because we have a hospital and all types of resources right next door, literally in city. So I don't think we should be so fast to just think residential only and look at zones that we have right now that have some really excellent attributes that should always still be on, that should still be on the table at the end of the day. And maybe point that out to the applicants, like, hey, you have other options here that might suit you better than what you're thinking. Anyway, thank you.
We'll begin that process probably in April, and these are exactly the things we'll discuss when they're in the room. So they can answer those questions and present their side. So I don't want to speak for them or talk too much about their project when they're not.
Neither am I.
I didn't tell them that we'd be talking about their project tonight.
Yes, Councilwoman Kesty.
Thank you. I guess I just have a question when we're talking about building and homes and apartments. How is it that we then, the schooling issue comes up in my mind. Mm-hmm. And if we're bringing in all of these apartments and all of this stuff, and it's great for the city, but these poor kids and their schools, they're bursting at the seams. How do we find a happy balance to, yes, come here. We want you to be here, but we also want you to get a good education and not have to, how does that work?
Well, school capital facilities are partially funded by the impact fees generated by new units. And we've discussed this. Right now, a new unit generates $1,700 per unit. So it adds up pretty slow. And you know, that's the number that the school district chose to put on it. Mount Vernon's impact fees for a single family, school impact fees for a single family are much higher. At one point they were $6,500 per unit, I believe. That's a tough pill to swallow for anybody who's building a house, but it's part of the territory. It's entirely up to the school district to set their capital facilities impact fees, and these are the numbers that they've had. Feel that we've got at least one school district member here.
Thank you.
So then my next question to him is that, well, why don't we do like a tiered system of like raising it up super high for apartments, and then someone who wants to fix up a home, they're in this level and maybe get more money, work with the schools. I don't know.
I'm just going to say that I'm not here as a school board member at the moment, so I'm not going to comment, but I am taking all of this into note, and we'll discuss it with my ELT.
How many people go to those school board meetings? Is that a commonly attended meeting? I've never been to one.
Since we went to Zoom, there's a lot more people that attend our meetings.
That sounds like a good place to start on this housing issue related to school. I mean, it is fair for the school district to understand that there's serious concern about the city's growth because of issues at the school district, and we recognize that their hands are tied financially as well. We're all in this together.
Yeah, I think it's also fair though to at least acknowledge that there were levies and bonds that were put out before the public, and the public then can make that decision as to whether or not they want to build the schools and repair the schools, or if they do not want to do that. When it went before the public last time, neither passed. So is that correct? Neither passed. So, I mean, it's kind of a statement as to how people feel about it. So I think you're a good advocate for this though, Joellen, and people would love to hear what you have to say from your perspective.
I have a question.
Yes, Councilwoman Kinzer.
I wonder if there are any studies out there about the types of residents that move into the different types of developments. Obviously, single family homes are going to be families. I would assume, it's more likely to be that way, but what about the commercial under residential over type places? Are those more likely to be retired couples? Are they more likely to be single people? It'd be interesting to know if there's any studies out there so we could know what the different types of developments would have to impact our school district.
That's a good question.
I've taken that note. I'd like to believe that the school district looks at these sort of standards and studies when they set their rates for, because they have two rates. They have a rate for single family homes and they have a rate for multifamily. And the multifamily tends to be lower than the single family. So what that implies is that the single family homes have a higher impact, which would imply that there's fewer students in multifamily housing. I don't know if that holds true in Cedar-Woolley. I don't know if there's regional differences. I mean, you can see the bus stop on Sap Road where it goes to the apartments there, and almost the entire bus empties. However, there's a lot of units there too. So maybe each unit is generating less than a single family home, but it's an excellent question from the council member there. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Councilman DeYoung.
Yeah, I would just like to add in on this conversation because it's a great conversation about those urban planning consultants out there and urban planning studies that can be commissioned to look at that data. And there's professional think tanks that do this, and is just seeing if there's a value proposition for the city to look at that. And I think it is appropriate then to invite other partners like the school district with that, and because that would be good information to collaborate with. Just a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Planning Commissioner Fatisi, did you have something you were going to say?
No, I don't even know why it did that.
Okay. I have something, Madam Mayor.
Yeah.
This is Councilman Owen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was listening to Councilman McCluskey, and she was talking about the school, having a heavy impact with people coming in here, more building. It's not only that, I mean, they're putting more and more pressure on our sewer plant, our streets, our roads. And I think there should be more changes before all these people come in. I mean, our roads are terrible. Highway 9 is going to put a lot of pressure on that. So I don't have any sympathy for impact fees, and I'd like to see the impact fees higher, because it puts a lot of pressure on the taxpayers of Cedar-Woolley. So I believe that the schools are just about maxed out now, and they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to build a new school or something. And the same with our streets and our roads. And I would like to see all this building, I'd like to see it slowed down. And I think it's happening too fast. That's just my input. And I know the sewer plant is almost maxed out now, and it's going to put more and more pressure on that. So that's my input.
All right. Thank you, Councilman Owen. And so that is happening, but there has been planning all along, which actually Director of Public Works, Mark Freiberger, could speak to regarding that. He's been working on this and planning ahead for some time. Do you want to make any comments regarding this, Mr. Freiberger?
Certainly. I think it's always useful to talk about that. As I presented to you when we did the sewer comp plan update, we've got a plan to look at the growth in the city and accommodate that with our treatment plant. We've basically have allowed for growth of 600 persons over the next, or 600 units, actually. That's probably more like 2.6 people per unit, so you do the math. Over the next 10 years. And we've been tracking pretty consistently at or just below that over the last number of years. I just did another check in the last couple of days, and we've been fine. And we are seeing a lot of activity right now, and y'all have heard about it. We do have a number of apartments here may not go this year. That will give us a bump in the short term, but we can expect that's going to level out over time. We've seen it go up and down, and we had a 100 units years ago, but then the next year was 20. So it seems to average out okay. As far as capacity of the plant itself, as I said when we met before on this, we have at that that growth rate we're talking about over 10 years, we have over 10 years of capacity in the plant yet. We have more than sufficient capacity for reasonable growth in the city. And it's kind of a two-edged sword growth, it always is. While it puts pressure on the facilities, it's also the major way we get the upgrades we're going to need anyway. Remember, our plant is already 21 years old and it is wearing out. And so we'll have to do an upgrade regardless in the next bit. And so having the money that does come in from impact fees is incredibly important to make sure that we not only are able to deal with the growth impacts on the plant, but also to build new facilities or rebuild the facilities so that they will function for another 20 plus years. So there's a real delicate balancing act we have to keep in mind. Yes, you have to be careful with the unbridled growth, but reasonable growth is not a bad thing. And it does support the goals of a well-planned city, which I think we are pretty well-planned at this point. The school issue is certainly an aside, and as Eric wasn't willing to speak to, but the mayor alluded to, there's been a number of attempts to fund new schools that the populace has turned down. That's been the prevailing situation for the last couple of years. But the growth is coming in anyway. Even if we did had some way to turn the spigot down, you're still going to have some background level of growth that's going to continue that pressure. And at some point, the folks themselves are going to realize, hey, we can't continue this with the facilities we have, and that will turn around as well. Will it happen in time to avoid the school district going to that situation where they have to put temporary classrooms up again like they were heavily into a few years ago? I don't know. Those are political things that somewhat beyond me as a public works director. So I hope that helped a little bit.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Mark.
I just did some quick math. And so we've got, if the 170 apartments that are applied for right now actually get built, that's $1.42 million towards the sewer treatment plant. So it's $8,500 per unit. So, you know, that's definitely paying the reasonable impact of the new units and will go a long way towards upgrades. Of course, impact fees are paid for parks at $1,500 per unit and 28 cents per square foot of new building that is built goes to the fire department. So, and we when we get a larger development, we are able to use our SEPA process to charge $500 per unit for police also. That goes towards police capital facilities. It's not an official impact fee, but that's something that the city uses as a tool to help fund capital facilities upgrades based on new population for police. And then of course the transportation impact fees, which Mark has spoke to numerous times in the past, which are vital for the Public Works Department in their road upgrades.
Okay.
I wanna just chime in here. So I will make mention of this. Brett Greenwood, our Director of Business and Operations, I have a message from him that, you know, this has been addressed before and that we are actually at the top end of our calculations for impact fees. That is a state formula that is used, and we're already near maxed out. So, you know, talk about, you know, things being handed down to you from the state. We're where we are based upon that.
If you look at the Cedaroli School District Capital Facilities Plan, which is both in our, we've tagged it into our comp plan and our capital facilities. And then of course it's on the Cedaroli School District website. It talks about their methodology and the numbers and how they arrived at that figure. I have not looked up the Mount Vernon one. I wish I was fast enough to do that.
Okay, I would like to give, we haven't heard from you, Commissioner Freiberger. Is there anything you would like to add to tonight's conversation?
No, I don't have anything to add. Just interesting.
All right, thank you. And Councilman Loy, I didn't know if you wanted to add anything. I think we did hear from you once, but is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, actually, I'm just thinking decades ahead listening to this at the same time.
Yep. All right, Mr. Coleman, did you have anything else to offer tonight or?
I'd like to reiterate what Council Member Loy says. This is something that, you know, the planning department, when we speak with people, we say all the time, is, you know, we have the luxury of patience in the planning department and city government. We make these long-term plans. We have to, you know, sit on them and watch them grow. And that's when you've been around long enough, you start to actually see some of the fruits of your labors from years ago. And it's quite a fascinating phenomenon. And it's been a pleasure to watch. It's been a pleasure to do this for the city of Cedaroli. And I really appreciate everybody's discussion today. I think I understand a lot of the council's concerns. And you know, we like to keep those in mind when we make changes, and just as we do our administrative work, I like to understand the council's perspective. So I very graciously thank you for your discussion today. I know planning's not always everybody's favorite topic. It can be a little dull sometimes, but when the rubber starts to finally hit the road, these things are very important and very real. So thank you. At the next council, I'll see if I can get the second read to this so we can get the Planning Commission working on the docket. If not, it may not show up until the first city council meeting in March. And if there is anything pressing that you can think of in the meantime, you know, we can discuss it then. This is the first read.
Okay. Thank you, Director Coleman. So I just want to restate, and I think you've already heard it from some of the council members here, planning commissioners, you are greatly appreciated. I don't know if you had a chance to read my article in the last city scene, but I acknowledged both your commission as well as other commissions here in the city that oftentimes people do not know anything about. You are people who do volunteer your time. You are compassionate about what you do, and you care about Cedaroli, and that is huge. Not to mention, you you're proof that this government works really well when you let the citizens step in and do the work that needs to be done. So again, a heartfelt thanks from both the city council members and from the citizens of Cedaroli. Yeah, I agree. It is what the 8 o'clock, what is it? What hour are we looking at here? My
7:15. Clock.
So it's 7:15. And if there is nothing else from anyone, anything for the good of the order, then I'm going to say we are adjourned. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Night, guys.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night.